Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to those who know that the world's political, religious, media, military, and economic institutions are rotten to the core, that they are the problem, and that there can be no religious, political, or military solution to what ails us. Our mission, therefore, is to look behind the headlines to know who is perpetrating these crimes that over the next 15 years will wreak havoc with our world. And as a result, in our second hour, normally today in our first, we're going to use evidence and reason to explore Yahweh's Torah, because His covenant provides the only reliable answer. Our phone number, if you'd like to participate in this discussion, is 877-376-45. For those familiar with the program, the reason that we invert the order on Fridays is because we have a very special guest that's joining us in the second hour. And since he calls in from Europe, it enables him to complete his work day and call us after his normal day is over. And he is the foremost expert on the religion of Islam, his name being IQ al-Rasuli. All right, I'd like to return to where we were at the end of our program yesterday. We were talking about the covenant. There was an extraordinarily insightful line that Yahweh used, and we are focusing on this because there is nothing more important. In all of the universe, there is nothing more important than the subject we are currently discussing. And I say that because the God who created the universe, the God who authored life, the God who inspired His testimony that He has provided to us in His Torah and prophets, has made it extraordinarily clear that He did all of this, including giving us His Torah and revealing His prophets, because He wants to have a covenant relationship with us. The term covenant might sound a bit stiff, but it's based upon the Hebrew word beath. And so if we were to translate it completely, effectively, into English, knowing that bereth is based upon beath, the Hebrew word for family and home, it's the second letter in the Hebrew alphabet, what we'd come to realize is that what God is interested in is being our Father and thereby helping His children grow. He wants to meet the needs of His covenant family, His children. He wants to adopt us, to enable us to inherit all that is His to give. He wants to perfect us, make us immortal, enrich us, empower us. And so these five benefits of the covenant, all gifts from our Heavenly Father, are for those who accept the terms of the covenant. Because in any agreement, and the covenant is an agreement, there are terms and conditions. Each party has to make a commitment to do certain things if they wish to receive certain things. So each party makes a contribution and each party benefits. In this case, the benefits of us participating in the covenant are all gifts from Yahweh. They are eternal life, perfection, adoption, enrichment, and empowerment. To receive these things, Yahweh asks five things of us. We need to contribute five things to this relationship. Because Yahweh wants to spend His eternity with people who have chosen to be with Him and who have chosen to distance themselves from those things that are hostile to His family. The first thing that He asks of us, if we wish to participate in His covenant, that we walk away from what He calls Babylon. Babylon, He explains, is the integration of religion and politics, militarism and economics. Babylon is not just a country, it is a mindset. It is this blend of religious doctrines that cause man to be so corrupt, so violent, so deadly, so destructive. And so that's the first thing he asks us to do, to walk away from those influences. You cannot be religious and participate in the covenant. You cannot be political and participate in the covenant. You can't be part of a military institution and be part of the covenant. You can't be defrauding people economically and be part of the covenant. Now, the covenant is not for people who behave perfectly, although God makes his children perfect. You know, the most loved member of the covenant was a man who had lots of flaws, but he understood that he could not be religious and engage in a relationship with God. The second requirement of the covenant is, rather than relying on governments and religious institutions, God says he wants us to trust and rely on him. Now, that requires some doing. To trust and rely on Yahweh, we have to come to know him and understand what he's offering. That's the difference between trust and reliance and faith and belief. With faith and belief, you don't have to know God, and you do not have to understand what he's offering. Belief fills the void. But with trust and reliance, knowledge and understanding are prerequisites. The only place you can come to know Yahweh is through the book that he inspired that introduces us to him, his Torah. The only place you can understand what he is offering, which is his covenant, is to read the Torah. We're reading that section now, considering what he had to say. It's in the first book of the Torah, Bereshith, Genesis. Something that is unknown to most Christians is what is encapsulated in this third statement. In fact, it's a product of really the first three requirements to participate in the covenant. The third being, God asks us to walk to him and become perfect. Now, that is for those who have already walked away from religion and politics, from government dependence, from religious dependence. This instruction is for those who have already come to know Yahweh, to understand what he is offering, so that they can trust and rely upon him. And so in the sequence of things, he says, I want you to walk to me and become perfect. The path to perfection and the path to God is the same path. The means to salvation is offered to the covenant's children. You don't get saved and then come to know God and then come to understand what he's offering. With God, it's the other way around. You come to know him first, come to understand what he's offering. You come to accept, embrace the terms and conditions of the covenant, and then, as his children, he saves you. Salvation is a byproduct of participating in the covenant. No one else is saved. Now, this path of walking to God to become perfect, we don't become perfect in the sense of our behavior. We remain flawed individuals. The Torah is for flawed individuals. The covenant is for flawed individuals. That's the only kind of individuals there are. What God is saying here is that if you walk to him along the path that he has provided, he will make you perfect in his eyes, which is all that really matters. That path, the first step of the way, is the doorway to God's home. It's called Pesach, Passover. And those who observe it become immortal. The next step is integrated into the collective of the first three mikre. It is matzah, unleavened bread. It is where Yahweh deals with the penalty of our flaws, of our sin, removing the corruption or yeast or fungus of sin from us. We become perfect in his eyes when we observe matzah. The third step along the way is that once we are immortal and perfect, God is in a position to adopt us into his family. That is Bereshith. Excuse me, it's Bukurim. We find Bukurim presented first in Bereshith and then developed in Kara, which has been corrupted to Leviticus. In Bereshith, we learn as we begin to study the terms and conditions of the covenant that when we walk to God along this path and we observe the third of these seven Moed Mikre, or this path from our world to God's home, that we become his children. Bakoda means firstborn children. This leads us to the fourth and to the four Moed Mikre that Yahweh has already fulfilled, that he has already enabled, doing all of them in year 4000 Yah, which was 33 CE. All of them in the Promised Land, all of them in Jerusalem, which is the source of our reconciliation in Hebrew. The fourth is Shavua. It means the promise of the Shabbat, the promise of seven. God's formula is seven. There are seven steps that lead to him. Six of those are part of the path. The sixth, the seventh, becomes the result, camping out with God. And so these are the first four Mikre because they provide God's means to justly, justifiably, honorably, morally provide his children with each of the covenant's five benefits, which I have already articulated. Now, on this path to God, the next step along the way is called Teruah. It's a time when we are called to share Yahweh's message, as we're doing here, so that more people might come to embrace it after recognizing the flaws of religious and political governmental dependence. That leads us to the Day of Reconciliation, and then ultimately to Sukkah, which is the seventh of seven Moed Mikre, where we enter God's home. And so this is what God is offering to us. Those are the first three conditions for participating in the covenant. The third being walk to him and become perfect. The fourth condition for participating in the covenant is to observe the terms and conditions of the covenant. That is precisely what we're doing now in this program. So I say this is the most important and valuable thing we can possibly do. To observe in Hebrew is shamar. It means to closely examine and carefully consider. It means to use our eyes to read the evidence that God has made available to us in his testimony, and then process that information in our brains so that we come to understand it. It is the same kind of technique that scientists use when they create experiments and they observe the results. We are called to be observant. Now, to observe the Torah does not mean that you do what the Torah says. It does not mean that you obey what the Torah says, because Torah means teaching and instruction. To observe means just that, to use your eyes, to use your senses, to be aware of all of the information that you can gather, and then to evaluate it and process it so that you come to understand it. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. There is a fifth requirement to participate in the covenant. It is that as parents, we are asked to circumcise our sons on the eighth day. Now, being circumcised is a requirement, if you're a man, is a requirement for participating in the covenant. You can't participate in Pesach, which means you can't become immortal, unless you are, as a male, circumcised. And God says that you cannot enter his home as a male if you are not circumcised. But as a to facilitate this, since the most important role in our lives is as parents, God asks us to circumcise our sons on the eighth day. It's a sign that we're going to set them apart from the world of religion and politics. We're going to set them apart from the family of man unto the family of God, and we're going to raise them so that they remember these terms and conditions of the covenant. We're going to raise our children to become God's children. Those are the terms and conditions, and from those, the benefits are afforded. Now, this was the passage we were looking at the end of our program yesterday. It reads, "And so Abraham," it was actually at this point still Abram, which means uplifting father. Abraham means merciful father who enriches and uplifts as well as empowers. Actually and continually walked relationally and beneficially, consistent with Yahweh's word to him. And so what we learn in this statement is that the reason Abraham benefited from the covenant is because his walk, his path through life was directed by Yahweh's testimony. And so if we wish to end up in the same place, which is in the promised land, which is a metaphor for God's home, if we wish to end up in the same place, then our walk through life should relationally and beneficially should be consistent with Yahweh's word to us. Now, what's interesting here is Yahweh's word to Abraham and Yahweh's word to us are identical. God didn't say anything to Abraham that he's not saying to us. God didn't say anything to Abraham that isn't available for us to read, to observe, to study, to understand. The path to Yahweh's home is the same for us as it is for Abraham. We walk in a manner that is consistent with Yahweh's word, which means we're engaged, we're upright, we're hand in hand with God. Now, there is only one path to God, which is the path through the terms and conditions of the covenant and the seven Moed Mikre. It happens to be the same path that the living manifestation of the word of Yahweh walked. If we are to follow Yahusha, if we are to walk in a manner that is consistent with him, our walk would be consistent with that which is presented in the Torah. That was Bereshith, which is Genesis 12:4. This is what God says next. Then Yahweh appeared to Abram. This is now the second of seven meetings between the creator of the universe and this very special individual who demonstrates the way for us to engage in a relationship with God. Then Yahweh appeared to Abram. He said, "To your seed I give this land." So he built an altar to Yahweh who had appeared to him. So at this point, not only did Abram walk in a manner that was consistent with Yahweh. Remember, it was Yahweh who asked Abram at the very beginning to walk away from Babylon, to walk away from his country. And then he said, "I want you to walk to this land," which he is providing. He is now in this land. And God said, "I'm giving it to your offspring, to your descendants, your children, your family." Well, the family of Abraham is the covenant family. And so the promised land, this land that God has promised, is for all of us who participate in the covenant. It is mine just as much as it is Abraham's, just as much as it is Yishak's and Jacob's, just as it is Larry's. Good morning, my friend. How are you?
I'm good. How are you, Yada?
Great. I love this transition, you know, that you go immediately from the announcement that Abraham was walking in a manner that was consistent with the word of Yahweh to him, and then we find Yahweh appearing to Abram and says, "I'm giving this land to you." It is the benefit, the result of walking in a manner that is consistent with Yahweh's word. We end up receiving the promised land. We are afforded entry. We can live there. Returning to this statement. So after Abram wisely walked in a manner that was consistent with the word of Yahweh, the same word that Yahweh has provided to us, Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, "To your offspring, to your children," which would be to the covenant's children, "I give, I bestow, Nathan. I devote, I assign, I entrust." This was written in the Call Perfect. This land, Eretz, territory, country, place, region, and realm. So he built an altar there, a place for expressing appreciation to Yahweh, who had appeared to him. There is a lot of extraordinarily important insights that we can gather from this. First of all, is that Yahweh himself appeared to Abram. Now, the appeared is from Ra'el, became visible to, was beheld by, was seen by. Now, Yahweh didn't say that in this testimony that he was seen by Abram as light, as a burning top of a mountain as a pillar of light. No, he said that he just flat out appeared to Abraham. In fact, later they're going to take a walk together. They're going to eat together. They're going to drink together. They're going to laugh together. So Yahweh took on a human form so he could relate to Abram. So that,
yeah, that's a very important point, because I had a fellow tell me all he does is the Torah. The prophets don't count. You know, I told you about this fellow yesterday.
Yeah.
And I said, well, let me ask you something. Can Yahweh appear in corporeal human form?
Yeah. Right.
And he says, no. And I said, well, that's interesting, because he sat down and he ate with Abraham.
Yes. Yeah. And by the way, when he revealed the Torah to Moshe, he took on human form.
Sure,
because he ate with them, he drank with them, he partied with them while he was
in the Garden of Eden. He was,
he walked through the garden in the cool of the day. He sat down by Adam and paraded all of the animals in front of him so they could talk about the various forms of life and enjoy. Just
now, that just destroys one of the pillars of rabbinic Judaism, that Yahweh cannot take corporal form. And they're well aware of this.
Yes, and I also see this in a bigger picture. It's not just that it destroys Judaism, because it's one of the 13 pillars of Judaism that God is incorporeal. But it also destroys the myth of Christianity, that that there are two advents and there will be a second coming. And that Jesus is somehow the totality of God, and that he is a unique persona. Yahweh says, no, he appeared to Abraham. It's Yahweh's name. There is no Yahusha here. It's Yahweh's name. And it said he appeared to Abraham. And so this idea of God taking on a physical form to relate to us is fairly common. In fact, it happens seven times. God's favorite number, of course. Six of those have actually occurred. We're within now 20 years of the seventh. And so this notion that there's something that was unique about the arrival of Yahusha, even if you knew his name, Christians, which you don't, even if you go to this point, there was something unique about this, and that's why we have to celebrate Christmas Day. No, there wasn't. That was the sixth appearance in corporeal form. This is the second appearance in corporeal form. And so here we have Yahweh taking on physical form, appearing to Abram, which also means that Yahweh in human form, Yahweh setting aside part of his nature to relate to Abram, is part of the Torah. So God walking in our world, engaging in our world, flows right out of the pages of the Torah, just as Yahusha came right out of the pages of the Torah. This is the Torah that we're reading, where God is manifesting himself, Yahweh is manifesting himself as a person, an individual, to Abram. And one of your favorite passages, Larry, is where Yahweh says when he returns that his children, particularly Yehudim and Israelites, are going to finally look at him again and relate to him as an individual. God even says that he appears to Abram as an ish, an individual. In other words, we're going to come full circle. We're going to reaffirm this relationship that Yahweh wants to have with us. He's not lording it over Abram and says, you know, I'm Almighty God. You need to, grovel at my feet. No. He said, I'm an individual. You're an individual. I want to have a relationship with you. Individual to individual. So then Yahweh appeared to Abram and said, to your seed I give this land. So we have the next three concepts here that are important. The seed is Zerah. It's always presented as singular, but it is a plural concept. It is like you go to the store and you buy a bag of seed. If you buy a packet of seed, you get many of them, not just one. If someone says, "I want you to seed the field," they're not asking you to walk out into the middle of 1,000 acres and put one seed in the ground. Paul, pretending to be really smart, says that that seed is singular, so it is speaking of a singular individual, so that the promised land is being given only to Yahusha, the Messiah.
That's a pretty ignorant concept, isn't it?
Well, particularly since seed is always singular, it is a plural concept, and it's used many times in the singular where it is obviously speaking of many, as it is in this case. So, to your seed, to your offspring, the covenant is about offspring. The covenant is about children. The covenant is about family. And so the Hebrew word zera is used, and it's conveyed even by the lettering is conveyed by something that you could equate to one of two different things. In the ancient world, it was a seed with a root coming out of it. Today we look at it, it looks like a sperm with the little tail, which would be, you know, the means to procreate. They didn't have microscopes back in the day, so they would not have known that. That meaning would not have resonated. It certainly does today when you look at the form for the lettering of this concept. But with everyone, even then, it would have resonated. This is a seed which sprouts a root and then begins to grow. Now, the next thing is I give. The Christian notion of the Torah is that it enslaves, that it takes people's lives, it takes their liberty, it takes their salvation away from them. It's a taking document. But Yahweh presents it as a giving document. Right here, I give, I bestow, I grant. I have produced, I have been signed, I have entrusted. I give. This was written in the Call Imperfect. The call stem says that this is something that actually happens. Well, the imperfect is ongoing. The call is genuine, actual. So I have actually given, and I continually give. That I genuinely gave with ongoing consequences, unfolding throughout time. That's what Call Imperfect collectively conveys. And he is conveying this land. So we read Eretz here. You know, remember when we were covering the story of Noah and how English Bibles have the entire world being flooded? Well, it's the same word, Eretz.
And yeah, he didn't. Obviously, he could have used Taleb, which would have been world.
World,
yeah.
Right. And he didn't. It was this land, Eretz, this region. And here, Eretz is used, and it has to be viewed as a very specific place, a very specific realm, because Yahweh asked him to walk away from Babylon. That was that realm to this particular realm. And he's later going to take his children out of Israel, out of Egypt, out of Mitzrayim, the crucible of Egypt, this other politicized and religious place, back to this land, away from one into the other. Which means that Eretz has to be describing a specific territory, a place, a region, a realm. Now, in this particular case, this land, and it's Amar Eretz, you know, we talk about the promised land and Catholics, you know, their Pope was talking about the Holy Land. There is no such place, and you'll never find anywhere in the Torah, prophets, and Psalms that the land is referred to as holy, ever. Now, it's referred to as set apart, but everything associated with Yahweh is called set apart. The Shabbat is set apart. His name is set apart. The covenant is set apart. Yahweh is set apart.
That air of religion, doesn't
right.
it?
The spirit is set apart.
They had to corrupt the spirit that is set apart, Ruach Kodesh. They had to corrupt that with a religious notion of being holy.
Right. But it is important to recognize. It's important to recognize that the land is set apart, but it is not holy. Now, what is called the Promised Land is really an extrapolation of the Hebrew word Amar. Amar was used right here when we translate Yahweh appeared, which is Ra'ah, to Abram. He said, Amar. He said, Amar. Now, Amar Eretz is actually the name of the land. And so, for us to call it the Promised Land, what we're really doing is we're extrapolating something Yahweh said to making what Yahweh said a promise. So the Promised Land is really the land spoken about. It's the land of the Word. It's the land that was spoken about in the Word of Yahweh. And since everything Yahweh says is reliable, everything Yahweh says is true, everything Yahweh promises, he fulfills, the extrapolation becomes it's the Promised Land. But if we wanted to be precise, it is the land of Yahweh's Word. Now, it represents a physical place on earth, yes, Israel, including the West Bank, including southern Lebanon. It includes Israel. That is the place that Yahweh gave to the descendants of the covenant, to Abraham's descendants. But it represents far more than that. It is the realm that we are given the opportunity to live in, where we live forever with God. We'll be back in a moment. Welcome back to Shattering Myths. I'm Yada. We're here having a conversation with Larry. The last part of this is the part that might seem in conflict with the notion of God giving access to his home to his covenant's children. It reads, so he built Bana, an altar, there to Yahweh, who had appeared to him. But let's think about this for a moment. First of all, the verb, Bana, doesn't just mean built. Bana is an extrapolation of ben in Hebrew. It's actually making it an extension of ben. Ben is the Hebrew word for son. The conception of a family and representing the work and name of the father. And so, when you look at the secondary and tertiary definitions of Bana, they all convey the concept of sonship. And so, he's building a family. He's building a home. He's building something that helps to memorialize what it means to establish a family name. This family being Yahweh's. The altar, the mitzvah, is a place for expressing appreciation. Now, this relationship between Yahweh and Abram wasn't ordinary. No, this is a relationship between the creator of the universe, the author of life, and a man, for the express purpose of enabling all humanity for all time to engage in the same way, to be part of God's family. And so this is a relationship that needed to be memorialized. So Abraham erected a monument to draw our attention to codify, to memorialize its value. Not only to express his appreciation, but so that we might express ours. This is the place where Yahweh met with Abram. This is the place that Yahweh gave to Abram, but not just to Abram. He said, I've given it to your children, to the descendants, the family of the covenant. When we think of Israel, we ought not think of a place that is now occupied and infested by Muslims and rabbinical Jews and them fighting amongst themselves. We ought to think of it as God thinks of it. It's his home. That's what it represents. When he returns in 20 years, he's going to establish his home in Jerusalem, which is the heart of Israel. And he is going to establish his own place, his own monument there. He's going to instantly destroy everything that's on top of the Temple Mount now, all of those hideous shrines to satanic religions like Islam, and all of the Christian cathedrals that scar Jerusalem. They will all be gone. And he's going to build his own home right on top of the highest ground of Mount Moriah, which is where the empty tomb is. It's where the crucifixion took place. And God's going to do it to express appreciation for his children.
You know what it sounds like to me, Yada? It sounds like there's going to be Yahweh, his family, and no religion at all.
That is correct. You know that when he returns, first of all, he's returning considerably less diminished than in a corporeal form. He's not returning in a corporeal form. He's returning as light. Now, he's not returning as the totality of Yahweh, but he's not even returning as Yahusha. Now, he is returning as Yahweh. And he's coming back as energy, as light. He's going to be as brilliant as a constellation of stars. But when he does that, all of those who are not already enveloped in his set-apart spirit for having embraced the terms and conditions of the covenant and benefited from the Moed Mikre, they're going to be instantly vaporized. In the presence of that much energy, they're going to be gone. And the second thing that we hear is that, so getting rid of the host of religion, which is humans, the next thing is that there will be tremendous earthquakes followed by this flood of water. And he is going to level all of the corrupt buildings, the religious and political and militarized buildings of the earth. He's going to level them all. And then he's going to have this flood of water rush through them to cleanse the land. So that once again, Yisrael, and indeed the entire earth, will appear like the Garden of Eden. You're right. It'll be Yahweh and his family.